A series of 1,000, the topic of living with your teenager. Discussed in the past the fact that parents are technically, according to the Torah, supposed to be both friends to their children. We know this, and this vort comes from Rav Shimon Schwab, Shlita, from Rashi, and Yosef says to his brothers, "Vayasimeni la'av l'paroi," and Paroi made me a av, made me a father to him. Rashi says, "Av means chaver, father means friend." It's very important for parents to at least be able to relate to their children, besides as parents and besides as authority figures and besides as order dispensers, as friends as well. And the reason is very simple. The greatest influence on a teenager is his friends. That's a postulate that nobody in the world who ever met a teenager can disagree with. No parent that ever raised a teenager would want to challenge. No teenager would tell you is unso. The greatest influence on teenagers are their friends. Therefore, if you want to have an influence on a teenager, be their friend. It applies to rebbeim, it applies to teachers, it applies to parents. Now, when I say be a friend, it doesn't mean to relinquish or abandon your role as an authority figure. I don't mean that you have to be necessarily so buddy-buddy with the child that your role as a parent is jeopardized. There's a way to do both, and we discussed it on a previous tape. Tonight, however, we're going to focus on one particular issue regarding parents being friends. One very sticky issue. One tightrope that parents find they have to walk. Very often, they end up falling off that tightrope in either one direction or the other. And that is this. You want to guide your child in the right direction. You want to make him or her move in the proper path. You want them to grow. And if they go off that path, you want them to change. Problem is that teenagers, like all people, have an adverse reaction to those who want them to change. If you are friends, the teenager, you suddenly start preaching, or you suddenly start giving direction and advice, advice meaning regarding right and wrong, morals and ethics, a frumkeit. Teenager will automatically suspect, and often the suspicion will be correct, that your friendship, the only reason that you created this bond is in order to change them, which casts suspicion upon your connection with this teenager. Now, once this happens, you're out of business. You're a phony. You have ulterior motives. You have your own agenda. You may as well close up shop. And the truth is that if you really want to be a friend, that should not be the reason for your friendship. Friends are not friends because they want to change other people. It's okay to want your friends to do good. You want only the best for your friends. And you don't want them to harm themselves. But if your relationship with them is a trick to get them to change, that's not the way to do it. Honesty and integrity in a relationship is prime, is key to the success of the relationship. And the same thing applies vis-a-vis parents and children, teachers and students, rebbeim and talmidim. If you want to be a friend with a teenager, it has to be legit. You have to be a real friend. remember once, a couple years ago, when I was giving shiurim on the over the radio, and they were playing tapes. One of the girls in the office of the yeshiva that I worked in then came to me and said, "Rabbi Shapiro, you sure that you should allow them to play your tapes over the radio?" I said to her, "Why not?" And she says to me, "Well, then the kids will know all your tricks." I said, "Yeah, they'll know my tricks. Trick number one, be legitimately concerned over teenagers. Trick number two, be honest with them. Trick number three, care about them sincerely. It'll be terrible if they find out these tricks, won't it? It'll be terrible." For some reason, many people think that if you want to deal with kids, if you want to influence teenagers, you can only do it through trickery. You can only do it through dishonesty. You gotta trick them into changing. Maybe if you're a psychologist, and I only mean that as a joke, I don't want to offend any psychologists who are listening, but if you want to be a friend, if you want to be a friend, get that out of your head. It's wrong. It's not so. Not so. And Hillel told the Ger that what's hateful to you, don't do to somebody else, includes this. If you don't want somebody to become friendly with you only because they have an agenda to advance, namely to change you, don't do that to your teenagers. Teenagers are smarter than you think. They'll sniff you out, they'll figure you out, they'll discover you, and you're out of business. It's ridiculous. So many people think that. How do we trick this kid into changing? You don't trick them. Forget about the changing. Best thing you can do for a kid is to be their friend. And that means honest, sincere friend. You have to really care about them. You can't treat them like a file in a case. There are a lot of people I know that deal with kids and they have like files on them. They treat them like a number. And they look in their daily planner and they say, "Okay, who's on for today? Number 643 and number 547. Oh, you're talking about really caring. Attitude that adults have. Kids are people. Have to be treated with respect and with dignity. You don't have to stand up for them when they walk in the room. But if you want to create a bond with them, it has to be sincere and real. We have no tricks in Project Rejuvenation. We have no ways to connive, brainwash, fool people into changing. We're not interested in that. Philosophy is based on one cornerstone, on one foundation, on one principle. And to repeat it, greatest influence on a teenager are his friends. Ipso facto, if you want to influence a teenager, be a friend, a real friend. No ulterior motive. Be a friend because you care. Now, this can't be overstated, and I can't belabor the point enough. Parents come to me and they say, "Oh, my son, my daughter, there's a problem, what do I do?" And I say, well, the first thing is that you have to open up communications. You have to maintain a relationship with them. And now, a parent may think that the purpose of the relationship, the purpose of the parent-child relationship, is in order to get the child to do what the parent wants. No! Wrong! Purpose of the parent-child relationship is because the parent cares about the child. And the child cares about the parent. That's the purpose of the relationship. Once the natural father-child mother-child relationship is restored, then rest of the natural process kicks in, and that the parents become parents and the children follow suit. I guess the approach that I'm describing is like a back to nature, healing, curing type approach. Instead of injecting some artificial medicine, you regain the natural balance of the body, the natural way of living, and then all the systems naturally kick in. And it's the same thing with parents. Once you regain the natural, caring relationship, everything else has a much easier time kicking in. It's a back-to-nature approach to parenting. Sometimes, however, it gets sticky. You want to express your care to the child. Sometimes you may find that the expression of care collides with right and wrong. I'll give you an example that just happened a few days ago. One of the women that work in my organization who came to me told me about this dilemma. This particular woman, she cares about the kids so. This woman makes Florence Nightingale look like Scrooge. So much she cares. And the kids really feel it. And it means so much to them. You have no idea how much it means to a kid when somebody really cares about them. But really cares. Not because they want to change them. Not because they have an ulterior motive. Because they care about them. It's a good idea to learn how to care about people. No reason other than the fact that you care about them. So one of the boys calls up this woman and says, "You know, I bought you a present." Now, this call was made on Matzah Shabbos. "I bought you a present this afternoon. Be ready Tuesday." Obviously, if it's something that has to be ready Tuesday, it's either something engraved or something customized. Sounds like something nice. But the kid bought it on Shabbos. He didn't mean anything bad by it, at least not consciously. Now the question is, what do you do? Do you take the present? We know that accepting a gift from somebody is sometimes worth more to them than if you give them a gift. I'm not only talking about the Gemara that says that a Talmud Chacham can marry a woman by accepting a gift from her, because his accepting the gift is worth money to the woman. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking in regular relationships. On the other hand, how do you accept the gift that was bought for you on Shabbos? I mean, we know the story of the Chafetz Chaim who ran after the man that robbed his store, screaming that he's moichel him, because the Chafetz Chaim did not want to be any part of an Avera, even if that part was being a victim. How much more so, what must we think of accepting a present from somebody that was bought on Shabbos for you? Doesn't that show that you prove, or if not even approve, that you tolerate Chilul Shabbos? More, you have to appreciate this present. Doesn't it show that you appreciate it, even though there was Chilul Shabbos involved? Do you not take it? If you don't take it, you slap the kid in the face. If you don't take it, then you're showing the kid that his good intentions don't mean anything. That if he can't meet your standards, you don't accept him. It was bought anyway. It can either go in the garbage, or you can take it. You not accepting the present won't nullify, it won't retroactively eliminate the Chilul Shabbos. You're accepting the present is not causing any Chilul Shabbos. It's causing a kid to feel good. What do you do? This is just a mashal. There are so many cases like this. It doesn't always have to be with teenagers either. If you have a friend or a neighbor, maybe they're not frum, maybe they're not as frum as you are. They invite you for a Shabbos, for a meal, and you can't eat there. They bring you a present that they spent a lot of money on that you can't eat or that you can't use. How do you show appreciation for the thought, the effort that somebody put in, but on the other hand, show appreciation for right and wrong? How to do it? What you have to do in such a case, instead of focusing on the person that gave you the present, you have to focus on yourself. Meaning, when a Jew gives somebody else mussar, what the Jew is doing is fulfilling his obligation that the Torah said, Haycheach teichiach es amisecha. Nothing personal. It has nothing to do with the other guy. You have an obligation, and you have to fulfill it. If somebody doesn't want you, give teichacha where teichacha is called for, then they're preventing you from fulfilling your job. Teichacha, I find, is accepted by others more readily if you focus on your obligation. Give it. Very often, a kid that I deal with will ask me advice for something, and should I do this or that? And either this or that, or sometimes both, is usur. Talking about people that aren't from, we're talking about various different circumstances, and if I don't answer the question, I'll just go to somebody else. You want them to come to me, to a frum person, but we don't want to show our approval. I say, look, you know, as a rabbi, I can't tell you to do this. My hands are tied. Focus on me. I have a job to do. I have my obligations. Kids I deal with are from frum families primarily. They understand this. I can't. It has nothing to do with you. It has to do with me. I never can't tell you to do this. I can't. It's my chiyuv. I'm teaching in class and a student cheats on the test and I take the test paper and tear it up. Nothing personal. It's my job. It doesn't reflect on my like or dislike for the student. I have a job to do. I tell him, look, I have a job to do. They say, why can't you have Rachmanis on me? Why can't you have Rachmanis? Come on. You're a good guy. You can have Rachmanis. I say, look, I have a job. I signed the contract. Part of my job is to do this. That's it. I have a job to do. I have to proctor a test. I have to make sure you don't cheat. If I don't do the job, I'm stealing my salary. I'm fooling my principal. I am lying. I am cheating. I have a job to do. I came over to you in the middle of your job and asked you to do something for me. You say, well, I can't. I'm busy now. I have a job. I have a job too, and I have to do it. When your friar neighbor comes over to you and offers you this present, you want to say no. There are two ways to say no. You can say no, you are giving me something treif. You can say no, I have a problem. I can't accept this. Second way, will express the idea and enable you to maintain your relationship with the person. I have a problem. I can't do it. I have a problem. I have a job. I'm not allowed. What should I do? I can't. I have no choice in the matter. Child that offers you a present and buys you a present on Shabbos, and you don't want to accept, the right thing to do is not to accept that present. The only question is how. Maybe sometimes, maybe you can accept the present. I mean, don't forget, child's frumkeit is pikuach nefesh. And for pikuach nefesh, you're allowed to do many things, including chilul Shabbos. Sometimes, there's a halach in Shulchan Aruch, that if a child is kidnapped by the goyim, and you have to be machal Shabbos to rescue the kid, the kid's life is not in danger. The missionaries are going to treat the kid wonderfully. grow to be a wonderful Christian. You're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos to prevent that. So if you're allowed to be Mechal Shabbos, you're certainly allowed to take a present that was given on Shabbos, but just taking a present on Shabbos is sometimes worse, because if somebody the impression that it's okay. But I'm talking over here that the thing to try to do is not to take that present. The question is how. Now there are two ways you can refuse this present. You can say, look, you bought it on Shabbos, I can't take it. Listen, I have a dilemma, I have a problem. I want very, very much to take your present. I love the present. I'm so happy you bought it for me. You know I'm a Frumah Yid. You know I can't take a present. It's bought on Shabbos. I have a problem with that. I have a problem taking a present you paid so much of your neshama for. I have a problem doing it. Me. I'm a Frumah Yid. Have a problem with this. Okay, so I'll give it to somebody else, you will say. You tell them, the first thing is not to be intimidated, to try to understand what the kid is trying to do. You say, look, I want you to give it to somebody else. I have a problem taking it. I'm a Frumah Yid. I can do it. And if you want, you can add in a little sugar and a little fluff. I told the lady, I said, tell him like this. Hey, if you would have borrowed money from the mafia, buy me this present. If you would have sold your right eye to buy me this present, how in the world would I be able to enjoy it? Sold your soul to get me this present. Neshama, which is worth more than your right eye. How in the world I enjoy this present? By saying that, show clearly that you appreciate and understand the sacrifice that went in getting this present. But it's the truth. Somebody that hurt himself so much, this present, how in the world can you do? How could you do that? Step one. The conversation continues. You're not out of the frying pan yet. If you are, you're straight into the fire. Don't expect a rebellious teenager to melt because of one semi-poetic statement that you made to him. Okay, you don't want it? You don't want it? No problem. Make it no problem. I'll throw it out. That's what'll come. Don't throw it out. Leave it. I told the lady to mention to the boy the fact that Tar says that if somebody does tshuva mi'ahava, high level of tshuva, his avers become mitzvahs. Should save the present. She shall him until that time and does tshuva, that this Chil Shabbos transforms from Chil Shabbos to something to be happy about. Then you can take the present. What do you mean? You're only here. You're that's what you want. You want all of a sudden I should keep Shabbos? That's the trap. The trap is, so what? You're here to change me? The answer is never yes. This is what you have to remember. And this is what we were speaking about from the beginning. You're entitled to the same rights that this kid is. Tell these teenagers a certain honor system, a certain system of ethics in their own way. One thing on their ethical agenda, showing your true colors as opposed to being a hypocrite. That's the worst thing in the world. Another thing, giving somebody the right, this is on their ethical agenda, giving somebody the right to live their life. My life, I'm an individual. You can't change me. Don't forget, you're entitled to that too. Which means that the answer to this kid when he says, so, want to change me? The answer is no, but I don't want you to change me either. That's why I can't take a present that was bought on Shabbos. I don't want you to change me either. Child will respect you for living your life the way you feel is right, the way Hashem feels is right. No matter how far removed from Torah and Yiddishkeit this child is, when you find yourself in a dilemma between compromising your standards versus losing, breaking a relationship with a child, the best way to walk that tightrope is to focus on you. Forget about him. He's not the issue. You're the issue. You can't do this. Look, I'm a from a Yid. I can't do this. I'm not here to change you, but I don't want you to change me either. That's the attitude. That they'll respect. As long as you don't come across all of the rhetoric and all of the questions that you will hear from the other side is all designed to focus on one issue. Are you trying to change me? Are you trying to say that you don't like me the way I am? Are you trying to say that your relationship with me is tainted by a hidden agenda? The answer is, I don't know what you're talking about. No hidden agendas, no relationship. This has nothing to do with you. This has nothing to do with you. It has to do with me. I have a right to live my life the way I want. Are you trying to change me? Ask him that. Turn the tables. Are you trying to change me? Oh, no, that's not what I meant. You don't have to change either. You use their values. Try to understand that you're entitled to the same rights that they're demanding. It's very important to be able to learn this skill. The skill of saying no without harming the relationship. Because if you take that present that was bought on Shabbos, do you know what that means? It means you were just tested. You failed. It was a tough test, mind you. The test was, A, are you scared of me? Are you scared not to take this present? You don't want to. Are you frightened? Are you afraid of losing me? Do I have you on a leash? That's what the kid wants to know. How much are your values worth? Your principles? Will you compromise them? Your own agenda? Where you always tell me not to? This is all going on semi-conscious. It's not in the forefront of the child's thoughts. Another thing you're being tested is, how much do you really believe in this Shabbos thing? How much do you really believe in it? I mean, you tell the kids stories, you tell them halachas, that if your house is burning down, Rachmana Litzlan, and there is no danger to human life, it's a big if, but if there is no danger to human life, you have to let the house burn down. More, there are limitations regarding how much food you're allowed to remove from that house. Because the Rabbanim were concerned, they were worried, that if they allow you to take out food as much as you want, then you're going to take out things that are usur. So you have to let that house burn down. That's what you tell this kid. That's Shabbos. And that's our values. Tell him stories all his life. He's heard stories about how Frumma Yidden or Moisa Nefesh, how they throw themselves into fiery furnaces rather than compromise their Yiddishkeit. Maybe you even tell him that a tzaddik is allowed to give his life rather than violate even a minor mitzvah. Now he's asking you to put your money where your mouth is. How much does Shabbos really mean to you? Now, of course, he's not asking you to be Mechalel Shabbos. That's part of the test. If he's asking you to be Mechalel Shabbos, it becomes black and white. And he knows for sure you won't do it. Now he's seeing how much do you really feel about Shabbos. To somebody that keeps Shabbos, to somebody that understands what Shabbos is, accepting such a item is painful. It's obscene. Are you really plugged in to your own values, or is it just lip service? I know you won't be Mechalel Shabbos. How much of your heart is really in this Shabbos thing? That's the test you're being given now. And the deck is stacked because if you don't accept it, then you gave him a gun and you said, shoot me. Because then you don't care about me, which is more important. I didn't ask you to be Mechal Shabbos. I was anyway Mechal Shabbos. You're insensitive. You're hurting somebody. You're not doing anything wrong. Trying to be good. Don't my intentions count? I'm trying my best and you won't accept my efforts. You're shutting the door on me no matter how hard I try. It's a very typical manipulative tactic. The answer is, it has nothing to do with you, it has to do with me. And this is not the only example of a case where a parent finds themselves with a final examination in front of them, given by their children, the teenagers. And that questions are multiple choice, and the right answer is neither A, B, nor C. Being given a multiple choice test, and the right answers aren't there. Sayin is to see how you're going to get out of this dilemma. It happens all the time. There are so many examples of this. And parents have to learn not to take the test. You can say, excuse me, teacher, you made a mistake. The right answer isn't here. Don't lock yourself in. The way to do it is get away from the kid. He's not the issue, you are. In this way, you'll be able to remain friends. Sense that friends don't have hidden agendas. Friends don't try to change their friends. They may try to influence them. They don't try to change them. And in a friendship, each one maintains their own identity, and you accept the other person for what they are. And what you're doing is asking your children, accept me for what I am. You have a home. You have certain rules in the home. Rule Shabbos, rules about kashrus, rules about tznius, whatever. And a rebellious teenager in your home wants to violate those rules. Rather than focusing on the teenager, you focus on yourself. Say, look, this is my home. This is what I want my home to be. It has nothing to do with you. This is what I want my home to be. And I have a problem with it. I don't want to change. I don't want you to change me. I want to live my life in my home the way I want to. You're not letting me be me because this is my home. Not because you're doing something wrong and it's terrible and how could you do this in my home? It's not the way to say it. I mean, how could I do this? It's already an invitation for a fight. The idea is, I grew up all my life, went to school to make money. I had a dream to have a home, a Yiddish home. This is what I want. This is my life. I want to live my life my way. I don't want you to change me. You're not accepting me for what I am. In my home, that's what you have to do. It has nothing to do with you, it has to do with me. Violating the sanctity of my life. Totally different approach. Am I criticizing you? Am I telling you to change your life? I'm not telling you anything. I'm just telling you what I want my life to be like. And my home is part of my life. I paid for it. It's mine. I'm entitled. In your home, that's a different story. But in my home is my life. Another example, and this happens very often by me, when a child will ask me to lend them money. I know they're going to buy unkosher food with it. Just imagine that. A kid asks you, can you give me some money? And you know that they're going to take a train on Shabbos. Look, it is that the halacha is that somebody who's choshut on doing an aveira with the money that you give him, it's a gemara in Avodah Zarah, you can't give him the money. Look, can't do it. I'm a frumayid. I know what you're going to do. You don't have to say it in a critical way, because it's not criticism. Mitzvah of Teichacha, where somebody's not going to listen, where it's only going to make it worse, is not applicable. Forget about your obligation to give criticism. You're in a dilemma now. The way out of the dilemma is to explain, look, I'm not allowed to do it. I'm not allowed. Not that you're doing something wrong and I don't want to help you do something wrong. That's not the issue. It has nothing to do with you. It has to do with the fact that in the Torah it says, Lifnaiva loisitein michsho, I'm not allowed to do it. The kid may look at you like a fanatic. The kid may look at you like you came from Mars, but he's not going to take it personally. It's your thing. And he won't look at you like you're from Mars, because the kid was brought up in a from home and he knows what it's about. He may reject it. He may abandon it, but he knows what it's all about. Well, that's the trick. Trick to remain friends with your children, but still not compromise your standards. It's to invoke the natural right that you want. You can walk hand in hand with your rebellious teenager with this attitude. Comfortable in your lifestyle. And he's comfortable that you're living your lifestyle. He just doesn't want you to... You should live his for him. You don't want him to live yours for you. And until the time comes and the mitzvah of Teichacha is in effect, because it may have an effect, that's the way to live. It is usur to do anything that would pervert the halacha. I don't mean violating Shabbos to save a life. I mean declaring that it's okay to be mechalel Shabbos. Lying, changing a halacha in order to save a life, that you can't do. Am shel shloima pasuk like that. You're not allowed to do it. You can't change a halacha. You're allowed to violate a halacha, but you can't change it. It's Gemara. In the famous Gemara, and in the times of the second Beis Hamikdash, it's the beginning of the story of Kamsa Bar Kamsa, where he brought a carbon to the Sanhedrin, to the Rabbanim, to the Beis Hamikdash. We know that the villain of the story slit the lip or the eye of the behemoth to see whether they would sacrifice it on the Mizbeach, knowing full well that they would have to reject it, and then he'd go back to the government and say, look, they rejected your cow, and events leading to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash would be set in motion. There was a man, Reb Zacharia ben Avkilos, who had a position on this, and he was wrong, the Gemara says. The Gemara says they should have sacrificed that cow in order to save the lives of the people that died due to the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. But Reb Zacharia said, we cannot sacrifice this cow, because then people will say that a cow with a mum, a cow with a blemish, you are allowed to sacrifice. We don't paskin like Reb Zacharia. However, the rationale behind that statement is just this. Yes, Reb Zacharia knew full well that to save lives you can do almost anything, including sacrifice a cow with a slit in it. But Zacharia's problem was, people will say that you're allowed to do it. The halacha will change. And if the halacha will change, then you can't do it. Now, we don't paskin like Reb Zacharia, but you can't say, this we do paskin, you can't say what's wrong is right. Under no circumstances are we allowed to pervert the Torah. We are allowed sometimes to violate it. We are not allowed to change it. Sometimes we're allowed to do something that may give a wrong impression, maybe sometimes, but it's very, very precarious. Halachically, you gotta get on your phone and call your Rav before you do anything. that would give somebody a wrong impression about what you do accept or what you do reject. The way to live with a rebellious teenager and maintain a relationship with him while at the same time never violating this rule of accepting the unacceptable is focus on you, on my life. It's one of the secrets of living with a rebellious teenager or working with a rebellious teenager and not getting into fights with them. Follow this rule, you'll be able to live in a friendly way with any anti-from, anti-religious, anti-Torah person, be it teenager or adult, able to maintain that bond that's so important, hold you over, like a respirator, artificial respirator, until that day, the mitzvah of Teichacha will be in effect. At this point, we're going to take questions from the audience. The way we do it over here is the questions are written down on a piece of paper, handed up, and we'll handle them as they come in. Okay, the first question. The first question is a halachic question, actually, and that is, isn't it true that often it's better to violate an isser rather than insult somebody? For example, if a woman by a wedding, or I guess in any circumstances, sticks out her hand, it's better to shake it rather than insult her and not shake it? No, I disagree with that psak. And it's not me that disagrees, it's the Stipler and the Chazon Ish and Moshe Feinstein as well. And the Stipler in his letters discusses this, and he says not so. He brings the shita that Parag v'al Yavor, Nabayu de Gili Arayis. Is this not so? He says, doesn't the Gemara say that woman who's dressed not sneezdik in public was had her sneezdik a coat ripped off her publicly? So how do you reconcile this attitude with that Gemara? Stipler says not so. Now, according to many people, it's an issa d'oraisa. Heter of that shaking hands is not a derechiba. Reb Moshe says kosher lismoich al zeh. It's hard to rely on it. I know that there are people that do, but certainly not accepted halacha. Certainly not the stam mishnah. On the contrary, Rav Minyan and Binyan is on the other side. However, even if you would do that, tell you the truth, I can't discuss the even if you would do that because I don't really understand it. It could mean a lot of things. I don't know if it means daf because you're insulting her, but the kid we're talking about won't be insulted. You know, it could be a lot of things. It's hard to it's hard for me. I don't feel justified or comfortable dealing with a halachic opinion that I don't understand really. Next question. Question, what about when a teenager insults someone and doesn't apologize? How can a parent show that he or she cares about the teenager? Are you the person that was insulted? Is that the question? If a teenager insults you and doesn't apologize, how could you show you care about the teenager? I'll tell you how. Now, before I tell you how, it depends on the situation a lot. I don't feel anybody who's insulted. You can't obligate anybody to just sit and accept abuse from somebody on the other end. And I'll tell you how strong the Torah feels about that. If you take a look at the Sefer HaChinuch, in the mitzvah Voinoz Dvorim, it will say there that if somebody stands there insulting you, you are allowed to insult them back to make them stop. 100% permitted. And one of the reasons the Sefer HaChinuch gives is because a person is not expected to sit ke'evin she'en lo yhoifchin, like an immovable object. People are not expected to sit and just take it. We're not expected to do that. Certainly, parents are not expected to do that if their children are on the other end. Usually, not detrimental to your relationship with the kid, and it's always within your rights, and that's an understatement, to tell the kid, look, I'll discuss anything you want with you, but only if you talk like a mensch. Talk to you about anything. I'm not used to being spoken to that way. If you don't talk like a mensch, we're not going to talk. I don't think it's always wise, and it depends on the case, to bring up the fact, well, I'm your mother, you're my son, how dare you talk that way? Because sometimes it's effectual, sometimes it's just counterproductive, sometimes it just leads to an argument and the message will not get through. It's always smooth sailing. If you don't bring in the fact that you're an authority figure, but rather the fact that you're not treating me like a human being. I'm not used to being spoken to that way. I'll discuss anything you want, but only if you talk like a mensch. If you don't talk like a mensch, the conversation's over. And you may even add, and I expect an apology, but you don't have to. It's his mitzvah to apologize, not even apologize. You know, it doesn't say anywhere in Shulchan Aruch that there's a mitzvah just to ask mechila from somebody on Erev Yom Kippur. It doesn't say that. In the Ramah, if I remember correctly, it's assumed that you do ask mechila. The mitzvah technically is to be mafias, the person on Erev Yom Kippur, to pacify him, to reconcile with him, settle things with him. The mitzvah is not to go and say, okay, do you moichel me? The mitzvah is to be mafias him. Child has a mitzvah to be mafias you. That's his mitzvah, that's his problem. Depending upon where he's holding, he may not care too much about his chiyuvim. I feel that if a parent accomplishes the fact that a child recognizes that he's not speaking like a mensch and he starts speaking like a mensch, a parent will be able to swallow in the interest of not demanding an apology that is anyway not forthcoming. In the interest of not doing something that's anyways not going to work, I think a parent will be able to swallow the lack of an apology if the child recognizes as if there's Kabbalah Allah Habo, I think a parent will swallow the lack of Charat al Ha'avar. Usually the way it'll work. That's what you say. Instead of being spoken to that way, I'll speak to you anything you want, but you gotta speak like a mensch. Do it calmly. Calmly, firmly, fairly. That's what you do. Next question. What happens if the child's bad activity is not taking place in the house, but rather out of the house? In such a case, you can't tell the child, well, it's my life, I could live it the way I want. So how do you deal with such a situation? Today's shir will not help you in such a situation. It will not. It was not designed to address that issue. And it won't. You can't, the information that I gave tonight is a good, useful tool, like a fork. If you try to eat soup with a fork, it's not going to work. So, what I said will work only in the cases that it was designed to deal with. In your case, ein hachinam, it will not work. You have to resort to other things. It depends a lot on the situation. And obviously, that's a totally new question beyond the scope of the couple of minutes we have now. It depends on many factors. And what I'm asking is, well, we have a rebellious teenager. We have a problem that this shir's advice will not work. What do you do then? That's why it's only number 21 in a series of 1,000. The other 999 will hopefully be able to help you for that. Okay, thank you all for coming. You're a wonderful audience. Have a good night.